Hey everyone, and welcome to this, the Seriously Risky Business podcast. My name is Patrick Gray. Seriously Risky Business is the newsletter and podcast we run here at Risky Biz. The newsletter is written by Tom Uren, who joins me now. G'day, Tom.
G'day, Patrick. How are you?
Good, good. And yeah, of course, we the process is that Tom writes the newsletter and then we sit down and edit it together, have a bit of a discussion about that, and then we record this podcast. So, Tom, you did a few items this week. The whole thing's just great work this week. Fascinating newsletter. You took a look at North Korea's pivot in away from crypto theft. Well, I suppose they're still doing that, but their pivot towards doing ransomware attacks. You also looked at Biden's State of the Union address and how it could possibly signal that the USA is about to get real on privacy legislation, and also more balloons, because we had so much fun writing and talking about balloons last week that we had to continue with it. But let's start with the North Korea item. So we spoke about this on the weekly show yesterday as well, that it's a little bit hard to, you know, there's been an alert issued by the United States and South Korean governments saying that North Korea is now ransomwaring some hospitals around the place. And they're doing this both with homegrown ransomware variants, and they're also using, known ransomware variants, some of the Russian ones. It's a little bit hard, though, from the reporting to get a sense of what the scale is here and how worried we should be. And, you know, those are the two things you've tried to address in your research this week. And you found out some interesting stuff.
Yeah. So first of all, I suppose the framing of the alert was a bit weird. It said that they're using this ransomware to fund more cyber operations. So that's a bit confusing, because the point of cyber operations is not to do more cyber operations. The point is to achieve something else. And, you know, normally,
and it's not like they don't have Bitcoin to pay for, you know, bulletproof hosting already, right? Like, you'd think, considering how much crypto they've stolen, paying for their infrastructure hosting wouldn't be something they'd need to do ransomware campaigns for. So I also found that strange.
Yeah. So leaving that aside, I guess I asked around, you know, how much of a problem is it? And the ransomware incident responders were like, well, we don't know, because they're not focused on who's doing it. They're focused on what's happening, you know, the actual ransomware itself. Mostly they thought that the people who are doing this are moonlighting. So they've got opportunities because they're doing state-backed work, and then they're just taking advantage of those opportunities to lay down some ransomware and earn a couple of bucks.
And I mean, these alerts, though, they did heavily imply that this was state-coordinated activity.
Yeah, that's right. So I think it is a concern. It's not something that you just want to go, nothing to worry about here. I mean, the two reasons I'd be concerned is that state-backed groups just tend to be more capable than your average ransomware affiliate. You know, you've got a whole team of people working together. Some of the hacks North Korea has done are really quite good, and, you know, sensational from a technical point of view. Still bad hacking, but
I mean, some of their stuff targeting Swift terminals at banks was pretty amazing. I did know one CISO who went up against that crew once, managed to stop them, but said it was pretty difficult.
Yeah, that's right. And so if they're getting into it in a big way, that's a real concern, because that could make ransomware much worse. The flip side that makes me worried is that they're harder to deter. So with traditional ransomware, diplomatic pressure, arrests, cryptocurrency sanctions, all these things work to some extent. And you just kind of feel that against a whole state that's dedicated to stealing funds to fund their nuclear weapons program, many of those tools are not going to work.
I mean, you even make the point in this that for a brief window of time before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, it looked like there was actually some progress being made there in terms of encouraging Russia to crack down on some of these crews. And obviously that's out the window now. But, you know, you just don't have those options with North Korea.
It's certainly out the window now, but you can imagine that maybe in a few years' time it might be back on the table.
I think it might be more than a few years, mate, personally, but anyway.
It's at least conceivable that there could be some change in Russia.
In its leadership, yeah.
Well, I mean, the war is going to end at some point, right? And at some point there'll be an end. That doesn't feel like it's possible with North Korea. So this week, a few interesting things happened in that both the UK and US sanctioned individual ransomware criminals. So that's coordinated action against cyber criminals. And also South Korea sanctioned North Korean operators just independently. So I also look at whether sanctions are a good way to go. And the answer, you know, to cut to the chase is, yeah, I think so. And I think there's space for countries to do it in a coordinated way and also countries to do it just more often. So the particular value, I think there's a signaling value in acting together, which I think is very modest. There's also, at least when it comes to criminals, the more countries that are involved in sanctions, the fewer places criminals have to park their money. And I think that if you get enough countries and if you get enough of the right kind of countries, the ones that are actually nice to live in or nice to visit, I think that does become a significant problem for criminals. And so it's not just the US sanctions, but if you've got money in, say, I guess in this case, in the UK, perhaps that can be seized. And if you
now you referred earlier to the sanctions against the TrickBot crew. I mean, they don't just do ransomware; they're like all round, you know, fingers in a few pies type of crooks, from what I understand.
Yeah.
No, it is interesting. I mean, we were talking about this too before we got recording, and it's like when it comes to sanctions, it's like, will they work? Well, I don't know, but it won't hurt, and they're easy to do.
Yeah, and I think there's a spectrum of countries, right? For the US, it absolutely makes sense. I think there's a lot of countries where it makes sense. Like this week, Tonga and just recently Vanuatu have suffered ransomware attacks. Probably for them, it's not worth the effort. I wouldn't recommend it for every country, but I think there's a lot more that many of the bigger economies could do. When it comes to North Korea in particular, the goal here is to stop them funding their nuclear weapons program. And so sanctions seem to be the tool there.
So there's the sanctions against the individuals, but you make a pretty compelling case in your write-up that the sanctions against like the cryptocurrency mixers, which, you know, the Western countries have got good at taking them out pretty quick. Like it is a game of whack-a-mole. So you might have, you know, Tornado Cash and then they whack that down. Then another one pops up, whack that one down and it sort of moves around. But you know, it will kind of have an effect. It adds friction. It makes it difficult. You're sort of eliminating, makes it harder for people who aren't North Korea to keep following these mixes around, which reduces the volumes of crypto flowing through them, which might make asset tracing via the blockchain a little bit easier. So you make a pretty compelling point that once you add all of these things together, you start to see something that looks like an effect.
Yeah, I think so. North Korea has got money stuck because it's, I think some in Binance and some in other places where the actual wallets have been frozen, I guess.
Yeah.
I would say that we're at the beginning of this. It's relatively early days still, and I imagine that both the US, but also other jurisdictions will get better and faster. And so one example, this week it looks like one mixer that North Korea has used is just a rebranding of a previous mixer. And there's lots of evidence. There's a report by Elliptic about it. And that's the sort of evidence that I think that Treasury could use to sanction something faster rather than waiting for money to be laundered. You know, you start to develop a case earlier and then you can sanction them much faster and at least play whack-a-mole quicker.
Yeah, and if you make the laundering less effective, I guess the other benefit is, you know, eventually they got to cash this money out somehow, right? And you point out that they've stolen something like $1.7 billion in crypto assets. But, you know, we don't know how many of them they were actually able to cash out. And if they are only left with a handful of exchanges that will take that money and that are out of the reach of sanctions, I mean, my point is sanctions will affect exchanges because they're ingress and egress points for hard cash versus crypto, right? And I guess if you keep hitting the mixes to the point where you make tracing the money more viable, then you can start applying pressure to the exchanges, right, that might still take that dirty money. So, you know, I guess targeting the money might actually, you know, yield some results. I know, you know, there's some people out there have been a big believer that the chief way to tackle the ransomware issue has been about more tightly regulating the crypto space and trying to knock out some of the bad actors. And, you know, you step through this and you can see that it would actually make a dent.
I don't think there's any one single silver bullet, right? And I think there's lots of, I mean, the whole strategy, which, you know, I mentioned before, like it's got many different prongs and different tools, and using them together is the way to go. I still see that there's space to push harder on sanctions for countries that aren't the US, and both for countries that aren't the US and for the US as well.
Yeah. I certainly think there's also room to run operations against these guys.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. I wouldn't say stop doing anything else. I'm just pointing out here's a space we can go further. And it's a space where countries that aren't the US, aren't Australia, aren't Five Eyes can also contribute.
Now, you wrote up a section of US President Joe Biden's State of the Union speech, which was rowdy, right? Like, I only saw excerpts of it, but it was a rowdy affair. And there was a part, you've got a quote in here from the speech, which is, "We must finally hold social media companies accountable for the experiment they are running on our children for profit. And it's time to pass bipartisan legislation to stop big tech from collecting personal data on kids and teenagers online, ban targeted advertising to children, and impose stricter limits on the personal data these companies collect on all of us." Now, you and I were talking today about this. It's my feeling that what's going on here is Biden is taking the issue of like general data regulation and he's attaching it to being a child safety issue to box Republicans into supporting the measure. You know, we see a lot of people, particularly on the fringe of the right in the United States, who are always throwing around the, you know, groomer slur at people on the left. It's sort of turned into this culture war thing. So by dressing this up as a child protection measure, you know, it's my feeling that it's much more likely to go through because the Republicans won't want to oppose it. But, you know, ultimately there will be a child protection element to this, but that's not really what it's about. So I think the politics of this whole thing are really interesting.
Yeah, so I spoke to Brandon Pugh, who's at R Street, which is a think tank, and his view was that there's this kind of spectrum of possibilities over the next year. And at one end, you've got just nothing happens, kind of status quo, which would be a real shame. And one of the minimal possibilities he had is that there's legislation just focused on children. And the sort of maximalist end of the spectrum is that there's legislation out there called the American Data and Privacy Protection Act, and the ADPPA would get passed in that sort of maximal view. So I was really asking about, you know, where on the spectrum he thinks we'll end up or the US will end up. Now, Brandon was vaguely optimistic in that he thinks that there's actually a lot of bipartisan support for many of the issues that are kind of in the ADPPA. So, you know, protecting consumers, baseline standards for industry, strengthening cybersecurity. So those are all issues that many people agree with, but not all of them. One of the things I pick up on is that there's, I think, growing talk of how this, or growing understanding that lax data privacy is actually a national security problem. And yeah. I contrast that with the Chinese state. And I've written a couple of times in the past how they have really or touched on how the PRC has a national data strategy. And the idea is to get data and use it to national advantage. And in the US, there's been a lot of talk about what to do about TikTok. And the thing is, TikTok is one particular app and there's one particular problem. And when it comes to data itself, I'm not altogether, like I'm not convinced that it's a huge problem. But what I think...
But meanwhile, you could just go to a data broker and buy all sorts of stuff. Indeed, there was a story over the last week where someone was able to just go and buy a whole bunch of data on people who have various mental illnesses. And the data brokers were perfectly happy to sell this for, you know, a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, so exactly. So that's, you know, you're focusing on one particular thing that's not a problem and ignoring the whole literal sea of woe that's out there. I think that particular mental health data broker piece, what struck me is just that it's just a total free-for-all. Like there's no, you know, different data brokers were offering different things. There was no standards. they were basically spamming the researcher, trying to get them to buy stuff. Just very, very messy and uncontrolled. And that's not what you want when you're adversary thinks that data is a potential national advantage.
Yeah, no, I mean, I seriously see this as Biden going for it on this one.
Yep.
Certainly, as in, I mean, you know, he's not going to, he's the president, he's not going to introduce legislation, but, you know, you can see he's sort of paving the way here. And I think it's really interesting just if you look at the last sentence of what you've quoted, because it says, protect the kids, protect the kids, protect the kids, protect the kids, and impose stricter limits on the personal data these companies collect on all of us, which is really the, you know, that's the big part. And, you know, to me, this really just looks like, you know, I'm of the opinion, I think he's a lot smarter than people give him credit for. And I think this is one of those examples of him playing politics in a really clever, clever way. You know, he's sort of like old and dottery like a fox, this guy. You know? I just think he's very clever. And this is how he's going to get it done. What do you, you know, what do you think about my idea there?
You sold me on it, to be honest. I was not okay, convinced good. Beforehand. And maybe that's partly just me being optimistic that something will actually happen. I think there's, yeah. I actually believe it would be good for that legislation to get passed.
Me too.
We briefly looked at it a while ago and it seemed pretty sensible.
Yeah, I mean, they're way behind on that. So let's see if it happens. All right, last story, and I had to write the headline. I'm very sorry. It's a pun-based headline. USA fights inflation. So, of course, you know, we're writing about the balloons. Last week, you wrote up a bit of an analysis piece basically arguing that, you know, China's balloon spying program didn't really look like it was a grave threat to the national security of the United States. Indeed, since there's been rumors floating around that perhaps this thing got blown off course and was designed to be, you know, hovering over Guam or something like that. But either way, basically you said, you know, this is something that's additive, not revolutionary, if you're operating a balloon spying program. And as long as you're not being detected doing it, hey, why not? And we also wrote, you also wrote last week that, you know, US officials had said there was a detection gap for these things. And we made a joke about how, you know, the defense contractors are probably salivating at the possibility of multi-billion dollar contracts to develop, you know, balloon detection capabilities. But it turned out all the US really needed to do was adjust some filters on some of its sensors. And that's why we've seen all these, you know, unidentified flying objects getting shot down over the last couple of weeks. But it really does just look like there were quite a few of these things left behind to mop up. And quite a lot of them are being shot down, not because they represent some sort of spying threat, but because they're a threat to commercial aviation traffic, given the altitude that they're flying at. But yeah, certainly the US and its allies have been mopping up balloons over the last week.
Yeah, so to be super clear, I think that I'd argue that a single balloon is not a huge revolution. But if you could have a worldwide balloon surveillance program that was going all the time, I think that'd be a great thing to have. Like, and so why not? And so I think what they've done, the US has done, is really sensible. Like, you shoot down the one you've got. And then they immediately, I think within the week, sanctioned 5 or 6 Chinese firms that are involved in supporting the balloon reconnaissance program. So they're taking pretty strong action. One of the reasons I've got this piece is, in the previous piece, I'd said that the US had discovered that there were 3 or 4 that had transited the US previously and they just hadn't known. And sort of thinking about it, yeah, it's got to be some database and they've got to be able to query the database. And so it looks like that's what happened, with different parameters, query the database with different parameters from the normal, we're looking for fighter aircraft or whatever. And so just by adjusting the filters, they can fix the whole detection problem straight away.
Just write a different SQL query and away you go. Balloons fall out.
Yeah. And it turns out that there's just a huge number of balloons worldwide all the time. I think I saw somewhere 67,000 balloons. So it's no wonder that they're finding other ones that are just unaccounted for.
Well, it's no wonder they tuned them out then, if there's 67,000 of them. You know, you don't want to be just, you know, that's like the world's, that must have been the world's most annoying alert at NORAD. Oh God, it's another balloon. Every 10 seconds, another balloon.
Yeah, and it's, I think, curious that it makes total sense to filter them out. And what are you going to do? Are you going to launch a fighter aircraft every time you detect a balloon? Probably they will be for the next few weeks. I think both the US and China kind of assumed that balloon surveillance wasn't a problem. The US it's not a problem because no one would do it to us. And China, it's not a problem because no one's ever detected it and done anything about it. And so they both kind of slip-walked into this diplomatic brouhaha.
Yeah, it's better than the other word I was going to say, which starts with cluster. but anyway, so people can go check out Tom's newsletter. Head to risky.biz/subscribe to find the Substack link. You've also got some stuff in here about some work from Chainalysis. You've got a short section on the upcoming renewal of Section 702 Surveillance Authority. That's pretty interesting too. So yeah, go forth and read the newsletter if you want more details on anything we discussed today. But Tom, you're in. That is all we have time for. Thank you very much for joining me, and we'll have this discussion again next week.
Great. Thanks, Pat.